I'm Melissa Harris Perry. Thanks for staying with us on The Takeaway.
The books. Are you seeing the books? Everything you would want to read is right here. Feel it. Feels good, right? Now smell it. Nothing smells like that.
You gotta love those Gilmore girls and the way they capture the love of books. And for many of us, books are the medium of summer. I mean, what is better than a reading challenge at the local library that culminates in an ice cream social? Okay, yeah, I know. But I do love books, and we're inviting all of y'all to be part of our summer reading here on The Takeaway. So we're going to be talking a lot about books in the coming days and weeks, and bringing you conversations with the authors of some of the gripping novels, compelling memoirs, and jaw-dropping nonfiction works that have all of us excited about words and ideas.
My name is Layla Motley, and I'm the author of Nightcrawling.
Layla is out with her debut novel, Nightcrawling, and she's just 19 years old. But that's not necessarily surprising, given that at the age of 15, Layla became Oakland's Youth Poet Laureate. Now, this book is so good, Oprah Winfrey chose Layla's novel for her book club, making her the youngest author to land on that coveted list. Nightcrawling is a novel, but it's inspired by a very real story that happened in the Oakland Police Department back in 2015.
I knew that I wanted to have a title that kind of encompassed the characters in this book and the way that they move through the world. And I think that Nightcrawling ended up holding kind of so many dualities, in that it is a word that isn't validated by the dictionary, but is very much real in the same way that these characters might not be validated by the world around them, but it doesn't take away from their authenticity and existence. And then it's also a word that holds, you know, these different meanings. It literally means walking the streets at night, but it also refers to all of these, you know, things that we do underground at night in order to survive. And I think that that really ended up holding true to the book and these characters.
She's not so much night walking as she really is night crawling at mm-hmm. various points. I mean, you actually take her off her feet in multiple stories. You dedicate the book to Oakland and its girls. And Oakland is as much a character in this text as everything else, as all the embodied people. Tell me about your Oakland.
I was born and raised in Oakland. I still live here. I think it's the greatest place on earth. I think that it's such a special place, especially because it's almost hard to describe. There are so many things that like kind of are felt when you're here, but are hard to translate because it's this coastal city, and it's a historically Black city. We have this history of revolutionary tradition. We have, you know, so many artists and just like a culture of creativity. And then there's this like vibrance and groundedness that I think so many people in this city have, and the city itself has. But I think often Oakland is represented in such binary ways. And the depictions that I always saw and heard from outsiders was that it was either this very violent city, you know, crime ridden. The most common thing I ever heard was like, oh, but how do you feel safe walking down the street? And then the other flip side of that was, you know, in the past 10 years with the influx of wealth, like that the city is new or up and coming. And I think that both of those depictions really frustrated me because I don't think that they hold true to this place and to its many nuances. And so I kind of wanted to write this book and put in all of what I know this city to be.
The first and last sentence of this text have fairly extraordinary parallel. Mm-hmm. I almost always do this. I don't go back and read the last sentence first, but once I've read the last sentence, I always want to see if it's still in conversation with the first. And this is your first novel, and many, many writers, I think most writers, their last sentence isn't necessarily in conversation with their first, but I just, I'd love to hear you read the first sentence and then the last one.
Yeah. Here's the first one. The swimming pool is filled with dog and Dee's laughter mocks us at dawn. And then the last sentence. Trevor and I finding our laughter just like Dee somewhere in the beyond, screeching out this moment of delirious joy, letting the water swallow us.
You begin and end in the same place at the pool. You give us Dee's laughter at the center both times. But if someone were to read that first and then last sentence, they might think that this is the arc of a happy story easily packaged at the end. Tell me about, especially for folks who haven't yet had an opportunity to take the journey of the book, tell us about the swimming pool and about Dee.
Well, the swimming pool is kind of the center of their motel-style apartment complex. And we start with, you know, seeing Kiara, the main character, her neighbor, Dee, who is an addict and has a 9-year-old son who Kiara ends up forming this, like, strong bond with. But we see this pool filled with literal feces. And kind of throughout the novel, we see this evolution of the ways in which they're able to experience the pool. Again, like a duality of this pool has held a lot of hurt and pain, and at the same time, it's a site for joy and for delight and for relief at times. And we see, you know, Dee, who is this mother figure in the book, and she's kind of in and out of the novel. But I think a lot of the Black mothers and the Black women in this book, we get to watch them as they kind of crumble under the weight of what the world has given them to carry. And we see Dee kind of having left it all in order to really survive it. And Kiara, the main character, is kind of taking up the care for Dee's child. And so a lot of this book is about Black women and vulnerability and what it means to care and to be cared for.
And ultimately, it really is the women caring for each other.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that we see Kiara, she's 17 at the beginning of this novel, and she is already caretaking for everyone around her. And as we meet the other Black women in this novel, we see the ways that they are also kind of doing the same thing in the many different iterations of caretaking, and how there's this kind of communal heaviness of what it means to have not been asked but expected to hold everything for everyone.
What you highlight about what these women are surviving, I just want to be clear, is it's not just all the things one might structurally expect around poverty and sexism and racism, but quite specifically state violence in the form of sex trafficking and sexual assault by Oakland police officers. Can you tell me a bit about the true stories that undergird the characters and the plot line?
Yeah. So in 2016, a case broke in the Bay Area where a young girl was sexually abused by various members of various police departments. And there were attempts to cover it up, but eventually this case came out and it kind of consumed our local media. And I was, I think, a young teenager at the time. And I remember paying a lot of attention to this case, both as a reflection of, you know, kind of the lack of protection that I already understood as someone moving through the world in my body, but also as a reflection of the ways in which, even when we talk about cases like this, which very rarely happens, the attention always ends up redirected towards the police officers, the police department, the repercussions for them, and not on the systemic harm to young girls and women of color. And so I mean, I think years later, I did more research about cases of police sexual violence, very few of which ever make it to any kind of media or courtroom, because it is very difficult to report to the very people who have, you know, inflicted this harm. And so I was doing this research and started to really think about what it would mean to write a novel from the narrative perspective of a survivor and a young Black girl who ends up in a situation in which she has very little agency, but in which we get to kind of see that she has a whole world and what this impact means on a person's life and their entire being. And so kind of Kiara came out of that. But I think it's really important that we do talk more about what police sexual violence does to so many young girls, and whether we have data on it or hear about it very often, it's existing and it's happening all the time. And the silence around it really just reinforces the neglect of Black women and girls.
There's one particularly brutal moment where Kiara's facing yet another moment of assault, of trafficking, and there is a march happening, and Freddie Gray is on the lips of the protesters. And that distinction between the abuse she is suffering right in that moment by a police officer and the ways that movements have emerged primarily, and to be clear, importantly, around the mm-hmm. violence that police have done to the bodies and lives of Black men, mm-hmm. but it also just sets in stark relief right. how hard it is to call the names of the girls and women.
Yeah, and it's so interesting because, you know, Black Lives Matter, Say Her Name, even the Me Too movement were founded by Black women and organized by Black women, attempting to center Black women as part of the resistance to police violence and sexual violence. And yet there seems to be this kind of co-opting that happens in every case, despite the attempts of Black women to enforce and include ourselves in our stories. But I think that what often ends up happening is there's this shift towards Black men, I think partially because Black women have been put in a position in which our grief and our support is the primary focus, and that never allows us to be really seen or recognized as vulnerable people. And police sexual violence and sexual violence in particular is hard for, I think, a lot of us to cope with and come to terms with in these huge movements, because it does really require us to recognize that sexual violence isn't actually about sex. And when you have authority figures involved, that really comes to the forefront.
You also do a lot of work here with the ways that Black girls and women feel responsible for the brothers, the neighbors, the boys and the men in our lives, that Kiara's singular focus at points on her young male neighbor, on her brother's well-being, even on the well-being of her now deceased father. We see that kind of, or at least I read into it, the ways that so many of us are trained from a very young age to think of the welfare of boys and men as mm-hmm. being the central concern of our lives.
Yeah, and to not question it. And I think that so many of us learn it before without even knowing that that's what we're learning. And it becomes very hard to kind of detach ourselves and our worth from the livelihood and care of the men around us. And I think that because, you know, boys and men, Black men in particular, are also brought up with that expectation that the care will come from the Black women and girls in their lives, it creates this kind of continuous cycle that we, many of us, I think, can't really figure out how to get out of.
I would not describe the end of the book as a happy ending, but there is nonetheless a lot of joy throughout the book, including in that final sentence. Why was it important for you to write Kiara in a way that still had, you know, basketball and mm-hmm. And music and pancakes and a mm-hmm. birthday cake?
I mean, it's so important. I think that we often think of humanization as something that often requires us to dive deeper into someone's pain and trauma. And I think that that's definitely part of it. But in order to fully humanize Black characters, I think we really need to see them as whole people, which means that we experience a wide spectrum of emotions and moments, and getting to see joy and delight and grief and mundane moments and all of these different things allows us to see Kiara as a complete person.
Layla Motley, author of Nightcrawling, and apparently of many other pieces I know I'm going to be checking out. Thanks so much for joining us, Layla.
Thank you so much for having me.